Our main goal for developing the Cornell soil health test was to quantify soil quality issues that we observing from growers' field, and those issues cut across different aspects of the soil, physical, chemical, and biological. On the physical side, we've seen soil crusting, surface and subsurface compaction, reduced infiltration. Chemical problems that we've observed on growers' field include nutrient deficiency, nutrient imbalances, acidity, and toxicity. And the biological issues include loss of microbial diversity, loss of organic matter, and increase in root diseases. And our approach to soil quality was to integrate the chemical, biological, and physical aspects of the soil so that at the end, our assessment will provide an overall view of how the soil is doing. And we started by analyzing and evaluating 39 different soil properties that could serve as potential soil quality indicator. We started actually in 2003, and part of the work we did is reported in this publication below, which is impressive. So we worked on 39 different soil properties and looking for which one will give us an assessment of soil quality in the Northeast specifically. And the criteria that we eventually used to select which indicators we found useful include the sensitivity to management, functional relevance, consistency and reproducibility, ease and cost of sampling, and cost of analysis. And after putting the indicators to those tests, we came up with various indicators, which is now the part of Cornell soil health test. The physical indicators include the soil texture, aggregate stability, available water, and surface and subsurface hardness. The biological include organic matter, active carbon, potential mineralizable nitrogen, root rot rating, and then the chemical that we're using for Cornell soil health test include pH, extractable, phosphorus, potassium, and some other minor elements as listed there. And all these indicators, they are related to important soil processes that affect crop production and environmental conservation. And briefly, to go through how we sample for Cornell soil health test, we have a system where we have of nested samples, sampling scheme. On a given field, we have five locations. On a homogeneous field, you establish five locations, and then at each location, you collect samples, disturb sample at 0 to 6 inches, and then at each location, you take two penetrometer readings at 0 to 6 and 6 to 8 inches, and then you enter that into the intake sheet, and then you make a composite from this, the samples collected at the five locations, and then you put about 1.5 liters in a plastic bag and you send it to the laboratory at Cornell University. So that's briefly how our sampling goes. And it's done in early spring. Right now we take sample in the early spring. And then once again, these are the soil quality indicators that I showed the other time, you know, that are part of Cornell soil health test. And the texture is very important because that influences our interpretation of the soil quality indicators. And right now, a sample costs about $45. And we started offering this test, the Cornell soil health test, on fee-for-service basis this past spring. And this was made possible through the cost-sharing grant that we got from New York Farm Viability Institute. And they subsidized the sample. And also, it's important to know that the test includes the standard chemical test. So the growers that send in samples are getting a very comprehensive package for the money they're paying. And then I want to go briefly through our scoring methods. You know, we, in order to establish thresholds for different indicators, we had to develop scoring curves for individual indicators. And part of it was through expert opinion. And then at times we use the existing information that is available, that are available in literature. And at times we resort to percentile distribution of our database. And basically, our scoring curve, the pattern of our scoring curve goes in three different ways. More is better, in which, for instance, an aggregate stability, the more aggregated your, the more stable your soil is, the better it is. Then in some cases, the less is better, like subsurface and subsurface hardness. You don't want your soil to be hard. So the less the hardness, the better for the soil. So, and then in some cases, we have an optimum curve describing the indicator, such as pH. And this is an example of the scoring curve for soil aggregate stability. And you can see that the scoring curve is according to texture, whether it's clay, sand, or silt. So this is the clay soil. You can see that the threshold for clay soil is different from silt and for sand. And the lower threshold, that is the minimum that is the minimum score that the soil can get, you know, is different for different textures. So this is for sand and silt. So just an example of a scoring curve. There are so many of them, I mean, for each indicator. And then at the end of the assessment, we produce this report sheet. You know, we give growers and farmers this report sheet for their fields that was analyzed. And this report sheet consists of different parts. The first part is just the information about the field, you know, different basic information. Then we have the indicators that were measured and the values of measurement that, you know, the values that we got from laboratory analysis. And then the next one column is the rating based on a scoring curve. The soil is rated on a scale of 1 to 10. And, you know, it's also color-coded, you know. From 1 to 3, you have red, then 4, 5, 6, then you have yellow, and then as from 7 upwards, you have green, so that growers can relate to the traffic light approach that we have used, red, green, and yellow. And then the next column is a constraint column. Once you have red, which means there is a problem, a constraint pops up and you see what the constraint is, and those are the areas that growers need to target in order to improve their soil. And this is the percentile distribution of each indicator in the database of our measurement. And we also have an overall score, you know, which is on a scale of 1 to 100. Basically, it's just the sum of the rating scale to 100 to 100, you know. So depending on which, depending on the score, then you have all these various classes of description. And then just to give you an idea of the sample, how we went through the sampling, you know, actually we in order to develop the indicator, the important indicators, we had to collect samples from control or research sites and commercial farms. We started in 2003, and you can see that in 2004 we had a lot of samples from control sites. That's the year we sorted out our indicators, which ones are important and which ones can serve as you know, for our Cornell soil test. And then by 2007, we've taken a lot of commercial farm samples when we started offering the Cornell soil earth test on fee for service basis. Then now I'm just going to show you some results. This is a result of 414 fields that were assessed. And you can see that when you look at the field, let's start with the chemical. You see that there is actually we need to look at this red. I want you to look at this red bar. Those are the fields with constraints where the indicator is scoring low. You can see that in chemical, you can't see anything happening so much. But by the time you move to physical, you see that about 30% of the fields have constraints in aggregate stability, and close to 50 in available water, and then subsurface hardness and surface hardness were real issues in many of the fields, I mean, that that were analyzed out of these 414 fields. And then you can see organic matter constraint to close to 35%, and then active carbon was close to, constraint was close to 60%. So we can see that on the physical and biological, there is actually a lot of problems in many of these soils, which is not apparent if you just look at the chemical, which is the normal thing that is done now, you know, the chemical test. So it's important to have an overall view of the soil. And then we broke down the data according to different management systems, food crops, vegetables, and dairy system. Starting with food crops, you can see that a lot of the soils, you know, we have about 118 samples there. And you can see that a lot of samples had constraints in available water surface and subsurface hardness, many of the field crop soils. And then when you look at the biology, you see that close to 55% have constraints in active carbon indicator, which is an indicator that shows how biologically active your soil is. And then when you look at the vegetables, you can see the aggregate stability was a major problem here. Close to 60%, and then you have available water issues, and then subsurface hardness, and then the biological issues that we saw in vegetable soils include the organic matter. You can see that close to 60% of the soils have constraints in organic matter, and the active carbon was way high, close to 80%. So it shows that there's a lot of problem with biological activities of vegetable soils. And I mean, this could be related to the way vegetable soils are normally handled in the Northeast. They are relatively over-tilled to make them friable and, appropriate for vegetable crop production. And in the process, a lot of organic matter is lost. When you, fluff out the soil too much, then you have a lot of losses in organic matter, especially if you don't add organic matter to replenish the system. Then for dairy system, it's a little bit less problematic compared to the physical and the, and compared to field crops and vegetables. For dairy crops, you can see that most of the constraint is in surface and subsurface hardness, and we could associate that with a lot of farm traffic and like manure spreader that goes over the land. And so we feel that the compaction issue may be related to the farm traffic and the way the soil is being handled, equipment-wise. And then we're putting all the results together for field crops, vegetable, and dairy. The highlighted soils are where we have constraints, indicator constraints, and then you can see that for field crops, 4 indicators are showing constraints, for vegetable crops, 5, and for dairy is 3. So it shows that dairy system, they're really looking better compared to field crops and vegetables. Then quickly go through, we also did some principal component analysis of the data that we're observing, the data that we have in from the commercial farms. And this is for sandy soils, and you can see the components that were extracted. About 5 components were extracted after we did an orthogonal rotation using Verimax method. The aggregate stability and the biological properties, PMN, organic matter, and active carbon, they were extracted in the same component. Then you can see the extraction going. Then this looks more like chemical component 1. Then this is another chemical component. So it's kind of very interesting, the results that we're seeing. And we have a similar experience in the silt soils. The same set of components were extracted, in the first component as in the sandy soils. And then you can see phosphorus and potassium coming together again. Then finally, in the clay soils, it's a bit different. You can see that, here, phosphorus and active carbon and organic matter, they move together. So clay is behaving differently from silt and sand. So we could use this information in the final analysis to streamline further our soil quality assessment, and also to aid our better interpretation of, to aid the better interpretation of our data sets. And our future plans, briefly, is to continue to promote the use of Cornell soil health tests as a management tool so that growers can target specific soil constraints. Then we want to streamline our soil health indicators for other non-agronomic practices. We've had a lot of people showing interest from the landscape, top grass, and urban land restoration. So the kind of indicators that will be useful for them will be different from the agronomic indicators. And also, this year, we got a grant from a conservation innovation grant that will help us to link Cornell soil air test with soil conditioning index. Soil conditioning index is basically an index based on tillage and organic matter management of the soil. And Cornell soil air test goes further by looking at some other aspects which SCI doesn't look into. So we want to link them together so that it can be used for a better implementation of conservation security program. It's a national program that promotes a better management system through financial and technical assistance. These are the funding agencies that have been supportive of our work over the past years, and thank you for listening. Yeah, what we've done in that case is to use the percentile rating of our distribution. You know, what we did was, because of the textural effect, we separate the soil according to texture, and then we look at our database for active carbon, and we establish the 25th percentile as the minimum, and then 75th percentile as the upper threshold. So anything below 25th percentile is cost 1. Anything above 75th percentile scores 10. So in between, we do a linear interpolation between 2 and 10. That's how we did it for now. But that may be changing very soon.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, you're welcome.